my name is Alex Graff. I'm here on behalf of the West Central Association Board of Directors. The West Central Association would like to speak in support of Sterling Bay, that they're a true community partner that has transformed the community in West Loop and Fulton Market by listening to stakeholders' concerns and ideas. They've been a community partner in the WCA neighborhood for almost a decade. Some examples of their work in West Loop and Fulton community include their genuine interest in working with the community to build and rehab the context or fabric of the community library that they had donated, as well as the millions of dollars that Sterling Bay contributed to the Neighborhood Opportunity Bonus Program, and their ability to attract corporations and commercial tenants to Chicago by developing neighborhoods and buildings that attract millennials. Based on Sterling Bay's work in the West Loop and Fulton Market neighborhoods, the West Central Association Board of Directors believes Sterling Bay will be an asset and partner to the community as it has done for 10 years in the community.
Thank you.
My name is Jeremy. I came to the TIF meeting because I was a friend and a huge fan of The Hideout, and I saw that The Hideout was made a landmark status, which was awesome. I came back to this meeting because I was concerned about the amount of green space. You guys went from 13 acres to 21 acres, and the renderings are amazing. I think anyone who's paid for landscaping in their own yard knows how much that might cost. So thank you for listening last time.
Thank you. Sir?
My name's Sam. I'm a resident of Bucktown. Two young boys that we're raising in the community. I do business here in Chicago, longtime Chicago resident. And my perspective on this might be a bit simplified, but when I think about living in Bucktown, the 606 is a great resource. And one of the problems with it is it dead ends at the highway. And so getting across the highway is relatively unsafe, similar to what one woman mentioned. Getting my two boys in a bike trailer across the highway is not a safe proposition. And so when I look at this, that the 606 would be extended, there'd be park places for them to play. I just look at it on the surface. And if you look at what's there today, this is an obvious improvement from my perspective. So as a resident of Bucktown, I'm fully in support of this and think it's a great plan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Michael, a 10-year resident of the 43rd, 11-and-a-half-year worker in the 32nd. I absolutely endorse this plan. I think that what this does for the city makes it absolutely better. It creates and allows this to be a destination in the city, much like what you've done in the West Loop. 20 years ago, the West Loop was filled with prostitutes, drugs, and a place nobody wanted to be. 20 years later, it's a destination. It's a beautiful place to be, and it's made the city better. I look forward to this, and thank you very much for everything that you guys are doing. This is amazing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ma'am?
Hi. My name is Claire. I'm a resident of Ward 2, and I have some questions about the proposed soccer stadium on your plan. So based on the existing businesses that are currently in this corridor, like the Hideout, how close is the soccer stadium proposed to be built from the Hideout?
Do we know how many feet it would be?
About four blocks away.
Okay, so it's a 20,000 seat stadium, correct?
Yes.
So what is the projected impact of noise pollution from the stadium on a venue like the Hideout?
We'll obviously operate within all city ordinances as it relates to noise.
That is a great answer, and I appreciate that you're willing to obey the law, but drunk soccer fans are not usually as conscientious, and I'm gonna ask you again, how do you plan to measure the real impact? Are you doing studies on the other Chicago Fire Stadium?
I'm not sure the Chicago Fire Stadium is a good example. Frankly, they don't draw any fans.
Well, that brings me to my other question, because I actually... Okay, we can have a fight about soccer later, but look, The Chicago's Fire Stadium is of comparable size. It's also 20,000 people. And to your point that people aren't going to those games, my other question is that in 2018, their average attendance was 14,806, which also to your point, 14,000 more than I thought. But still 14,000 people are going out there, you know. And in 2017, the average attendance was 17,000. So that's a drop of about 3,000, which puts that stadium at 20,000 seats, only ever filled at 86.9% capacity. So from a business perspective, where is the audience for these soccer games coming from? Is there research and data on that?
Soccer's an explosive and growing sport, and the market for it is there.
That's not an answer to my question. I asked you a yes or no question. Is there data on, are you guys looking at market? Are you looking at the economy?
There is market data to back up the demand for the soccer stadium.
Okay, but what about the LA Galaxy when they brought David Beckham and then he left? No one's going to those games in LA, and that failed, and they didn't have data either. I'm asking you guys to like really do your homework here.
We completely agree, and we'll continue to do that.
So, so that's... Well, I have a couple more. Okay, so basically, we don't have data on the noise pollution impact, correct?
I don't believe we have data on the noise pollution impact. As Fred said, we will follow city ordinances.
Okay. What about access? So say there's a game at the same time, maybe there's a show at the Hideout. How are all these people going to be funneled based on the proximity of the both venues?
So we have an event management traffic plan that handles that. It's currently under review by the city.
Is it publicly available for download on your website?
I don't believe it is now because it's currently under review by the city.
Okay. So when will the review process end and when will it be posted?
I can't answer that.
Okay. So we don't know, basically.
Well, I mean, CDOT can answer that. I can't answer that.
Okay, so, I have another question. In the future for these meetings, would it be possible for you to post these online before? Because I was sitting in the back and I couldn't read anything, and the blinker doesn't show up that far back.
I think that's a great recommendation that we heard earlier, and we'd be happy to do that.
Okay, great. I will look for that next time. And then what about parking for the stadium? That actually was on my sheet. Parking for the stadium as well. Is there a planned parking lot? How are people going to funnel in from the roadways that were kind of talked about? I know you're talking about like new ones, but like specifically, will there be new paths to parking at the soccer stadium in development?
Louie.
There will be the two shared parking garages within the development that would be used for the stadium parking.
Okay.
To add to that, I would add that the spaces per seat that we're proposing in our current plan are actually slightly greater than comparable stadiums in the city of Chicago.
Okay. It brings me back to when we were talking about real data, is that like some people around me are saying, it would be really, I think, imperative for me as a community member to want to support this project if we have actual numbers attached to these things, because it's great to hear these words that, yes, it's bigger than comparable, but until I see numbers, I can't really believe it. And I know that's not a question, but in a response to yours, I just think in the interest of trust, it serves you to put these numbers publicly available. All right. So we talked about the parking. Yep. Great. And then... So we talked about the noise pollution. Oh, yeah, there's a quote from your spokeswoman, Sarah Hamilton. She said that we not only hope they choose to remain in terms of local businesses, but our goal is for them to thrive. So in terms of your goal for an institution like the Hideout to thrive, I really need to like see in the plan, I don't see anywhere where local businesses is taken into consideration. Is that something you guys are planning on rolling out later, or are we going to be able to see it before the TIF goes through?
As we told the owners of the Hideout when we met on September 18th, the Hideout is part of the fabric of the community, both past, present, and future.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be part of them thriving and being neighbors with them and continuing to collaborate.
Okay, that is so wonderful to hear. I need to see a plan. We need to see numbers. We need to see this actually incorporated into something you're showing to the community. Words are nice, but they don't mean much unless they're attached to documents with signatures. Okay, my final question is for the alderman. And I want to state that I have been both to the previous meeting about specifically the TIF and this meeting. And I want to say that it's really, I think as a taxpayer and one of your constituents, it's really frustrating to come to these meetings and hear, hey, we're talking about the TIF, not about Sterling Bay. Hey, we're talking about Sterling Bay, not about the TIF. These projects are related and it's an unfair burden to put upon us when we're not able to see the content at the meeting. Even in the city meeting, there was no agenda. We are not able to see the slides beforehand and prepare any sort of questions. I think with the amount of information that's being shared, it's an unfair burden on the average person to leave work early. I clocked out of work early today to get here on time, and I don't have time to digest the information, you know? So I just think it would be really great if there could be some advance warning and preparation for the constituents. So my final question is that we don't have rent control in Illinois, right? And we see in developments, I used to live in Ward 1 where there's lots of Centrum buildings going up. And over the course of 3 years, my rent went up $300 and I was forced to move. So what I'm trying to say is that Alderman Hopkins, why haven't you endorsed the Lift the Ban campaign and promised to try to bring about rent control again in the state of Illinois? Not even necessarily endorsing rent control, but lifting the ban on it.
It's not part of tonight's discussion, but I'm open to that. I'll consider it.
Very
Please
kind.
Call my office tomorrow and let's talk about it.
All right. Great. I just think, finally, I would like to say, in terms of response, I have to say, from an elected official, someone who has worked on campaigns, I do find that lackluster. And to Sterling Bay, I would say that you have been politically involved. I feel like through your active development in the city and your other partnerships and business terms, I would say that it would also be wonderful to see what your proposals are and what your support is for campaigns like lifting the ban, for really getting involved with the community. And I think that it's important that we do see a number on your affordable housing and things like that. There's oftentimes, I think, historically in Chicago, where TIF districts have generated money that's supposed to help poor and disinvested Southwest and West Side and South Side neighborhoods, and that money hasn't ended up there. So, again, I just think that while it's really great that you guys are on a panel, it's wonderful that you're here. We need to see numbers. We need to see hard facts. And we need to see that you're basing your projects based off actual market need, demand, supply, economics, et cetera. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Sir?
Good evening. My name is John McDermott. I want to ask you briefly about the housing component of the plan and then about the plan development itself. Within the 5,000 housing units that you project, or the 5,000 unit maximum, what are you committing regarding including affordable housing units and public housing units? And secondly, what are you committing regarding family size units? How many of those apartments will be 2 to 4 bedrooms so that families with kids are included in this new community?
You want to go ahead?
Yeah. I mean, the size of the units obviously will be determined over time and as related to market demand. I mean, we don't have a specific breakdown at this point. As it relates to the ARO, obviously we're committed to that. We will certainly have a component of on-site, off-site, and fee in lieu. We'll follow the ordinance.
Are you willing to include public housing units to provide housing that's where rents are income-based for low-income Chicagoans? Have you talked with the Chicago Housing Authority?
Again, we will follow the ARO and comply with it.
No. Yes or no?
I'm hearing that as a no. On the plan development, you presented some major changes tonight, including, I think, some additional sub-areas or more detailed sub-areas, phase. You talked about the phasing tonight. Are you going to submit updated plan development documents for the north document and the south document to update what was submitted earlier this year? How will we be able to see the language that you talked about?
I mean, all that you've seen, obviously, will be posted online.
Okay, but essentially, the plan development documents, Alderman, maybe you know this, the plan development will continue as filed and then be revised maybe the day of the plan commission meeting? Or what's the plan to make the, how will you make the plan development document, the actual legal instrument, the ordinance, available to the public so that we can see how these changes are being reflected from where it began?
Again, I mean, we're going to be providing all of this online.
Including an updated plan
development
document?
This will be online tonight or tomorrow morning. Well, as I understand it, there are hurdles and benchmarks at which we submit revised portions of it. I'm not an expert on the process of a plan development, but the city dictates when we file certain updates and...
We do have someone here from the city planning department that can shed some light. All those documents are our public documents, and they're publicly available at different times as we evolve. So eventually there will be a plan commission hearing, and the PD amendment will be presented with all sorts of exhibits and backup material. All that's available, and Noah from planning will explain how that works.
Good afternoon. As the Alderman just mentioned, there is a benchmark of when the plan development application is filed. That has happened. So as you've seen online, there are two filed applications for the two areas of land that make up the Lincoln Yards plan development. As we continue to review this process internally through the various departments, CDOT, CTA, MOPD, Fire Department, there are changes made on practically a daily basis to not only the exhibits that you would see in the PD, but also the language that's included in the statements. It includes comments that we hear from departments, from the Alderman's office, from the community, and that is ongoing. Once that gets to a form that the city deems to be an acceptable application to take the plan commission, there will be an uploaded version that goes online as part of the agendization of those plan development hearings. I can't speak to that. That's not a plan development meeting that's happening under my purview. I don't know what
that's the Community Development Commission regarding the TIF. I think it would be helpful for the Alderman to address that, but just my understanding, and Alderman, correct me if I'm wrong, is that what happens on December 11th is that the TIF study and the redevelopment plan are given to the Community Development Commission. Community Development Commission accepts them. I think there's an opportunity for public comment. And then a hearing is scheduled at a later date. Alderman, at the TIF meeting, you said that DPD's timeline is not your timeline. So as far as you're concerned, will that introduction of the TIF to the Plan Commission, is that still on for December 11?
Yes, but the December 11 date has no real significance. It's simply a parliamentary, procedure to submit the document and start the process. You're exactly right. The hearing is what matters, and I have the prerogative to set that hearing. So that's within my purview. I have not set the date for the hearing, and I don't intend to set the date for the hearing until we have these questions answered and until more work is done and more information is available. So the December 11th is going to come and go without any final, not even really a preliminary decision is going to happen. It's simply paperwork being filed. Stay tuned for the date. I will eventually set a date for a hearing, and it'll be a public hearing, and everyone in this room and everyone who unfortunately had to leave early will be encouraged to attend. But I haven't set that date yet, and I won't until we're ready and we get our questions answered.
If I could respond to what the Alderman just said. The significance of December 11th is that for the rest of the city council and the public, in effect, sees that the administration and the aldermen are moving this forward. They are in favor of an $800 million TIF and that process moving forward. And I think, Alderman, it would be wonderful to see you take a creative step in this to delay the December 11 hearing and to make the full TIF study and the redevelopment plan available online for the community to see before they're introduced. So I would encourage that. I'm sorry, one last piece coming back to the plan development. What I think I'm hearing from the panel is that, and from the gentleman from City Hall, many of us have had the experience of participating in City Council committee meetings where all of a sudden on the day of the meeting or the day before the meeting, a substitute ordinance emerges out of nowhere. Am I hearing you say that any amendments to the plan development that's been published, that those will be publicly available at least 2 weeks in advance of the plan commission meeting where this PD is considered?
So when I can't commit to a timeline for you, but what I can tell you is once a project goes to plan commission, that document, if it is approved, it does not get a legislative action. It gets a referral action. So we, the plan commission, refer potentially approval to the City Council Committee on Zoning, Building, Landmarks. They then hear the plan and make the legislative decision. So once it comes out of plan commission, yes, you are available to see the documents that passed as a referral out of plan commission.
Yeah. Isn't it correct that there have been plan developments where revisions to the plan development are made sometimes during the plan commission meeting? Isn't that correct?
There are, but not after. Very rarely is it after a referral out of the plan commission. It would take an alderman at the committee requesting a specific change to happen, and then that would be voted upon. There are no changes that are not voted upon. So the public is entitled to be at all of those meetings and that be involved in that process and have their their time to speak and opine. So certainly, if there's something that looks out of sorts to the public, they have the right to address that.
But sometimes they're being asked to comment on something, the details of which they have not been able to see. So
no.
it's a difficult. Okay, thank you. Coming back one more point on the plan development. The Tribune reported earlier this week that Sterling Bay has acquired some additional properties in the North Branch corridor that are outside the bounds of these two particular plan developments. They're, I guess, in addition to the 56 acres, if that would be an accurate way of putting it. Could you tell us what timeline do you envision in terms of coming to the community and to whichever aldermen are involved with your plans for those properties?
If I remember the article correctly, the addition was the expansion of our northern PD to include C.H. Robinson, the building, and the land next to it.
Okay, so Sterling Bay has not acquired any other parcels that are in the general area in the North Branch corridor, but outside of the proposal that we're discussing tonight?
Dean, do we own anything?
Sure, we do own other properties that are not included within these plan developments. That's correct.
And can you give us any timeline on when you'll come to the community or the city with your plans on those?
Our focus right now is on executing on the plan developments that we have presented to you tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, wake up, right? Are we still
here?
Hold
on, give her the mic.
Katie from the Hideout. Okay. To be clear, it goes like this. Community Development Commission, December 11th, goes to the Joint Review Board, goes back to the Community Development Commission for hearing and a vote, goes to the Plan Commission Review, normally a rubber stamp, goes to the Finance Committee, although we're not sure about the chairman, City Council vote. But by the time it gets City Council, it's kind of done deal. So I think what the thought is that if they can get it in before April, it's cool. So I think all we're trying to say is, you guys, this is such a big deal. I do believe you have the best interests of the, I mean, I'm hoping you have the best interests of the city. All we're asking is slow it down, man. I mean, this is so much for us to take in. Okay, I have very specific questions. One, are you paying property tax at this time? And if so, how much? Is the lawyer still here?
Yeah, definitely we're paying. Yeah, absolutely.
How much? I know how much I pay for my house.
I don't know the answer off the top
of my head. Can you post it on your website tomorrow?
We could look. It's on the Cook County Assessor's website.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to find your PIN numbers, if you know what I mean, right?
I don't know the answer off the top of my head, but can you give me the context of where you're going with the question?
The whole thing about TIFs is it's tax increment financing, right? So what you're paying now in property taxes for this property, that's solid dough to the city, right? And then all the money you make after that for 23 years goes into the TIF. So I'm just curious what you pay now for property taxes.
Yeah, I do remember that Finkel, when we purchased it, was $200,000, $250,000, something like that. It was very, very low.
Yeah, but it's different. So Fleet Management, when the mayor sold this property, was all into the, we're going to get all this great property taxes. Well, not so great now. But so I'm assuming that you're paying property tax for the city was paying zero. So you're paying
correct.
Something.
Correct.
Okay. So just post it on the website. Can you do that? Yes or no?
Happy to post it. Yeah, awesome. It's public record. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, it's just hard to find. And then someone asked me to ask you if we could have everyone's name and email address, because we couldn't write down who everyone was that's sitting on the panel. My third question is, have you applied for any federal grants in the last 6 months? My daytime job, this is all I do is
look
for.
No, the answer is no.
Okay, because there was a really great proposal that y'all should have applied for, because it would have paid for a number of these infrastructure ideas that you had, one of which is called TIGER, TIGER. A lot of the money goes to the rural community.
I mean, we're familiar with the opportunities under...
That's the thing, you guys. If you would apply for it, then it would have been less money out of the $800 million TIF.
There are certain periods where you're able to apply for that, and we're aware of that, and we will be following through at the appropriate timeline.
Okay, but you own the property now. You have the plans. I mean, most time when you submit these proposals, you're spending all this time doing what you all have done. You have all these beautiful plans because you're submitting it for the TIF. You very easily could have submitted it to the FTA and gotten dough from the feds, right? I don't know why you... Well, okay.
We'll be doing so.
If you don't get the $800 million TIF, will you walk away from this endeavor?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the infrastructure issues, we all know who live in the neighborhood, they've been bad for a long time. And, obviously adding people to Lincoln Yards will compound that. And so this is something that we have to somehow figure out how to get people around a little better. And we need the infrastructure. I do think it's an issue that would be an enormous problem if we don't extend the streets and widen Cortland and do all the, add the train station.
I get it.
It needs it. I mean, needs it. We live there. I mean, you drive on the streets. So.
But who paid for the North Avenue Bridge? And that bridge was $25 million. Your bridge, and that was 2008, your bridge was $100 million, kind of a diff. So I'm just saying there are many other places, pots of money that you can go for other than the TIF. My last question is, you didn't really answer that one. Will you walk away from this project if you don't get the TIF, yes or no?
We've always assumed the infrastructure would be improved. I mean, it's just like it needs it. I mean, I've lived there my whole life. So, I mean, I think if it's really like, hey, it's all just like it is now, and we're not going to do anything, I think it is a problem. I do.
There was a woman at the last TIF meeting, and she made a really good point. She goes, I buy a house, and I buy land, and I want to get the plumbing to my house. The city isn't going to pay for the plumbing to my house. I think that's where people have the disconnect. So if you can present to us a beautiful argument on that on your website, don't take up people's time now. But what was my last question? Oh, a correction. The CEO of Live Nation does not live in Chicago. Mike Rapino, he lives in Malibu. He just bought a house for $11 million. There is a representative for Live Nation that lives in Chicago, but he is not, in fact, the president. That's all.
Ma'am, Keith, we have a hard stop at 9. I think this has to be the last question. We give the room at 9.
Okay. My name is Molly Meyer. I'm a trained environmental scientist and biogeochemist. Also lived 2 blocks from here for 9 years. This site has a long history of industrial use and contamination. I think the development's efforts for remediation, jobs, and open space are going to be really, really needed. And I think the sooner we act, the better for all of us to have improved environment, jobs, and the open space. Thank you.
Thank you. So on that note, I'm told that we were supposed to be out of here by 9 o'clock. It's 9:05.
Keith, we can let it go a little bit.
Okay.
Can I go?
Sir?
All right, so I got 2 really fast ones. I heard you say something about the affordable housing. What's the best way to stay updated on that? Just like email you or...
I'm sorry, what was the question?
I know the question about the affordability for the residential, the different residential developments. You said you're going to follow the ARO. What's the best way to stay updated?
You can email me.
Okay, and then the second one.
dmarks@sterlingbay.com.
Okay, thank you. The city, and I'm with Metropolitan Planning Council, so the city and numerous partners collaborated on a plan to revitalize Chicago's rivers and increase accessibility and open space along the riverfront. MPC was one of the leaders of this vision and would like to see all new developments proposed along the riverfront aligned with this vision of creating an inviting, living, and productive river system. Your current plans indicate that improvements will be made to the area immediately adjacent to the riverfront with a series of trails and new publicly accessible green space. Part of this vision is to also ensure that the water quality of the river itself is improved. Do you have plans for in-stream remediation of the river system as well as mitigating any potential stormwater management challenges from new development which could have an impact on overall water quality?
It's probably 2 parts to that. I mean, currently, the Lincoln Yards team, extensive remediation has occurred at what we're calling Lincoln Yards North right now. Sources of contamination that would potentially impact the river have been removed. Further, once the development occurs, you're going to have sustainable stormwater management systems. So some of the potential impacts to the system to the river system from all the industrial legacy of the river are going away as this process occurs. That is the biggest immediate benefit of this development and the remediation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be fast. My name is David Salk. $1 billion tip, that just blows me away. Anyway, what percentage of this project is Live Nation's involvement?
They're involved in the entertainment district.
What percentage of the whole project? Is this viable without Live Nation?
It's less than 10%, I'd say. And to answer the other question, I couldn't answer that question without going back and looking at the entire,
Okay, so if Live Nation is not involved, you're okay. So I would like you guys to hold off, because Ari and Ram are involved with Live Nation. So I think it's really disingenuous to have Ram decide what's going to go on at this place with Live Nation if he has a vested interest. So I think you should hold off until Rahm Emanuel is out of office, which is going to be soon, and so he doesn't have a vested interest in this decision. And I don't even know if we need these new music venues, because we have plenty around town. This woman spoke about Chicago neighborhoods. That's what makes Chicago neighborhoods great, is a lot of the music venues around here. We don't need this, especially with the Uptown Theater coming online, hopefully in a couple of years. Our music industry keeps a lot of people employed, not just the people that own the music venues, but everybody that works there, the musicians, and Live Nation. I think this is just Live Nation's way to get another toehold into our into our city, and they're we don't need them.
Thank you. It should be. No, it'll turn on. Somebody's switching the mics back and forth.
You guys hear me?
There you go.
All right, thanks. Anyway, thank you, David, about that, about Live Nation. You got 12 people up there. They're the most important people at Sterling Bay. Thanks for coming out. We haven't seen you all year. We haven't seen you, actually, for 3 years. We were shocked in July when you finally had that first public meeting when the alderman and you just said again tonight, and Andy Glore said, they've been talking for 3 years. We didn't hear anything about this until this year, okay? On your timeline, on the Sterling Bay timeline, you didn't even buy the fleet management building until February, according to your timeline of this year, 2018. And so, and the city didn't even decide to sell it until last year, right? And then immediately within a week, you had these amazing Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill designs. In fact, even those designs for the Amazon thing that you said actually isn't what you're going to build, who did you talk to that you could promise to Amazon of something like that? Because you guys had a whole report to Amazon, and I think that Mayor Emanuel, Governor Rauner, there was a whole committee of people that got together to put together that Amazon deal. So they must have been very conscious of the scale of the project that you're doing. And yet tonight, again, after July, and after you met 100 people this summer, the Hideout fits 100 people every night, okay? So that's great. You went to 12 different events with the average of 8 people per event in private houses, and you met some people. But there's more than that still in the room. So my point is, you guys are being disingenuous about the transparency about this. A couple of beers on a casual conversation is not something serious and in writing. But even more onto this, you got to be concerned, really, all right? You know that Live Nation has multiple lawsuits in Des Moines, and in Cleveland, throughout the country, throughout the world, London. You need to be concerned about dealing with an operation like that and Ticketmaster. Another thing, the Ricketts, okay? They're not even mentioned here tonight, but they're building this stadium, okay? And so you should be concerned about that, all right? Not that they're major Trump funders, but really, the main thing we want to say is this. I'm a co-owner of the Hideout, but I'm also a Chicago public school teacher. I teach on the south side of Chicago. Every single day I'm with kids. And you guys, you keep saying the reason we should build this is because we live in Lincoln Park. We know the neighborhood. This is going to be so great for us neighbors. But we're Chicagoans, okay? And the mayor himself said that he was going to dedicate this term to building everything on the south and west sides of Chicago. This amazing $5 billion project would be amazing down in the 10th Ward, right? It'd be amazing in Englewood. It would be amazing if you had a high school and a 50-story building and jobs, and you're spending so much money and putting so much effort, and we are embarrassingly sitting up here arguing about bridges and transportation for Lincoln Park and Bucktown, when as Chicagoans, haven't you considered building a project like this in Englewood? Haven't you considered building it where the United States Steel plant went down? And so even Amazon, when they came here, looked at those places, right? And you guys are just shoving this into this project between Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, and Christmas, making sure by New Year's you got the deal you want, because we know why you have to get it now, right? Because the next mayor, the next city council, they might be more considering other parts of the city that could use something like this, especially a soccer stadium on the north side. So anyway, that's it for now.
Thanks, Tim.
Hi. My name's John Yeh. I'm a 20-year resident of the 43rd Ward, and I'm learning a lot tonight, and I'm questioning about the soccer stadium. Who's going to own it? Who's going to play there? How many times is it going to be used? Why is it there? And where are the parking lots going to be?
The parking lots are adjacent. There are parking decks that are around and are shared parking decks. They talked about the parking ratio earlier. The soccer stadium is not publicly financed with any dollar of TIF. It's privately owned.
By whom?
You, a group of developers who would like to develop a soccer stadium.
Okay. Why is it going to be here?
It's a fantastic stadium location. Is there, I mean, so.
I mean, who's going
to
play there?
The team scheduled
though?
To play there is a USL team. The USL is a Division II soccer league. And, you know, they play 18 home games a year.
And what's it going to happen with the other days that it's not being used?
It would be programmed either with music or with community events as far as, you know, state high school soccer championships, that kind of stuff.
Will it be enclosed?
The plan is not to enclose it.
Will the plan change?
If the plan that would be a much more expensive plan, if I can say that. There is no plan to enclose that stadium.
So 18 home games, and then the other 350 days a year.
It's tricky. It's a difficult business, and you know if we can't figure out a way to make it work, it'll be get trickier. But right now. It works with music and sporting events.
Mm-hmm. So I have another question about if you're going to build residences and businesses, how do you know who's going to come in there? I live on a street that has half the business spaces empty. Halsted and Armitage have vacancies, and they've built a lot of residences in the along Lincoln and Webster that are also not to capacity. I mean, how do you know who's going to move in?
It's a density issue, and I think we would share the concern that we would build things that are not rented. We have to make sure that we do that, you know, in a responsible fashion as developers.
So when you say you're going to build a certain number of residences or a certain number of stores, how do you know they're going to be occupied?
I mean, you don't build them all at once, and you phase them as best as you can, but you never have any guarantee that they're all occupied unless they're all pre-leased in advance, which is, frankly, from a development standpoint, a win, but rarely happens.
But you said you had some studies or some estimates. How do you base those estimates on who's going to move in? When are they going to move in? Are they going to be able to pay the rent? And who's going to pay the rent when they're not there?
Well, nobody pays the rent when they're not there.
And are taxes going to be gained by an empty?
Taxes are not. Taxes will rise to the level that they will exist at, and then to the extent there's vacancy, that does affect tax rates. But that's not, you know, that's a market dynamic.
But wouldn't that be your concern?
So of course, having vacant storefronts or residences or office buildings is absolutely our concern.
So why are you building more?
The demand is, I'm not, okay, so the demand is there.
I mean, these are just my questions that popped into my mind.
There are straight questions, and the demand is there. If the demand wasn't there, it's a 10-year plan, right? It all doesn't get built at once, and as demand increases, we continue to build more of the product that's there.
Well, what if demand decreases?
That would be a problem.
Well, we have vacancies all along our street. Why should we build more to have more vacancies? I'm just questioning. I mean, it looks like a great project. And in theory, if you got people to move in and if you got businesses to move in, it looks wonderful. It's a beautiful picture. And I appreciate that you all have come here to make a presentation.
Right. I mean, we have a good track record in the West Loop where we do a good amount of development in attracting tenants. And we would expect to see the same kind of outcome here.
And are the rents going to be comparable? Are they going to be, because I understand that in Lincoln Park, the rents are so high, people move out to go to places like maybe Fulton Market or Bucktown or other neighborhoods. Are these rents going to be higher or lower?
So, you know, I think you mentioned Armitage. The challenges of the Armitage retail corridor up and down Halsted is a completely different discussion. I think those rents escalated very quickly for a different set of reasons. And you know, living near that area, we understand that there's a vacancy issue there. It's on us to build and price those spaces so that they do rent. So
will it affect?
I don't know what the market rent is in the vacant storefronts on Armitage to tell you if they're higher or lower.
I don't either, but what if you build a more affordable place and then we get more vacancies on Halsted and Armitage? I mean, that's not going to be good for our neighborhood either.
I mean, there's more residences, more jobs, more demand. You know, I can't tell you that you stop development somewhere else until to wait until somebody who's raised their rents too high finds a tenant.
Who's going to provide the jobs is what I want to know.
Those would be corporations that we have a track record of bringing in from either outside of the city of Chicago or even outside the state of Illinois to locate fantastic jobs.
Well, it looks really nice. Pictures are great. The presentation was beautiful. I thank you for all being here, and I thank my neighbors for being here and asking very, very good questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello. Hi. My name is Adam Cole. I'm a resident, longtime resident of the 43rd and 32nd wards. I'm also the Assistant Regional Commissioner for AYSO Chicago Lakefront Soccer. It's an organization that supports 2,500 kids on the north side to, you know, play soccer. Our mission is really to develop children through sport and friendly competition. I am a supporter of this development 100%. I think it's beautiful what's been shown here, and I think development along the river corridor, you know, is time, right? However, the plans are grand, and it's going to be definitely transformational. It's going to set some standards probably for other large-scale development. However, I am concerned about the proposed method to open recreational space both at grade field level, surfaces for sport, you know, and at the waterfront and the river, kind of river sport activities like kayaking and so forth. I think there's a great distinction here. You guys talk about green space a lot, but, you know, some of this green space is up on rooftops, very high, off grade. So my conversation is focused purely on the grade, and I understand that you've presented this at growing from 13 point something acres to 20 acres of at-grade green space. Now, it's not all green, and some of it is park and landscaped, hardscaped surface. It's not lost, by the way, on many people here and in the community that this expansion came in great part by the expansion of the north boundary and including three more plaza areas, a third of a mile of riverfront, and with two significant buildings in association with that jump from 13 to 20 acres. So proportionately, it's not as big of a jump as it's being suggested to be. However, I say at this point, there has been little description as to the management of this open green space for recreational use and the interface available to the public. So to access and potentially reserve these spaces for all residents of Chicago, mind you, you know, this is public space. So I would ask, when can we see how that works? How is a soccer organization, would we approach whoever is operating this to use it, if not for games, just for weeknight practices in small groups of five or eight? I'm sure your kids have played soccer. And I caveat that with, and how would it be affected by the demands of entertainment use through Live Nation and, you know, Ticketmaster, that's all about pay for access, gated, you know, access. And I see that much of the green space has been incorporated between their venue spaces on the south end of the stadium, even between the amphitheater and the restaurant space is green space. I'm sure during a concert that's not going to be available to 12-year-old kids. And by the way, AYSO doesn't allow their events to take place near alcohol. So I think, you know, that's a concern. I just got a couple things, so I don't need the answer right now. It is a significant portion of a significant, obviously, project that you guys are doing here. You've talked about 23,000 daytime workers, three venues totaling up to 29,000 patrons and 5,000 residents. If 20% of those residents have one kid, that's 1,000 kids, okay? Even if it's half that, it's 500 kids. That's a lot of little soccer players who are going to live in this tight area who are going to be looking for some space to kick a ball around. And again, we have concerns about, is this really going to be available to them? And I think you guys should be very public how that's going to work. The mayor, Rahm Emanuel, said that, you know, the river is Chicago's second coast, and the North American, the Chicago Architectural Biennial just hosted recently the second annual, the North America's largest architectural thing where they said their number one priority was to make public access to the rivers a priority. And, you know, here what I see is elevated access off the river, some small park access, and the description of three water taxis that are, I'm sure, going to have private docks, and they're not going to really be publicly accessible areas. So I'm just wondering, why are we here today looking at this PD, a plan that doesn't include a large-scale park? Why are we reviewing something that looks like site development instead of community development that has public infrastructure that will ensure park access in perpetuity? On September 28th, Alderman Hopkins said at the meeting, the public hearing regarding the sale of the 2FM site, of which you guys have, you know, were the benefactors by being able to purchase that site, that the community will be part of, his exact words, you will be a part of the process that answers the questions of what will be built on the Fleet Center site. I'm pledging right now that most inclusive and transparent community process for a real estate transaction. That's what will happen in this. So we're talking about that transaction right now, but it's not entirely transparent. One conflict I see, you know, off the bat is during that, I don't know the documents, I didn't read them, but it was stated that the letter of intent from Sterling Bay to the city in its offer indicated 10 acres of recreational space would be utilized. So the difference between recreational space for a consumer area in front of shops versus green space where kids kick around a soccer ball, I think, is a great distinction that should be made very clearly. On the note of transparency, you have referred many times tonight to the plans of a transitway. This is a little outside my scope as soccer, but I felt it important to make public. The transitway has been talked about at least a dozen times tonight. It made one line in your 80-some page document, I think it was on page 47, when it talked at the bottom about features of Lincoln Yards, and it said that there would be a transitway. That was the only description. Tuesday, the Illinois House approved the extension of the Goose Island TIF specifically to support a transitway development between the city and Lincoln Yards downtown. Wednesday, the Illinois Senate approved that same TIF, and now it's up to the City Council of Chicago to determine if those TIFs should be extended. And we've heard a lot. I'm not here to talk about the material handling of TIF and TIF funds. But what I am saying is why in this presentation, when these things are active and you've shown the yellow lines terminating on the east side in the middle of private land. On the south side, a gentleman who owns stuff between General Iron, and on the north side up in and through an existing right, I guess you have, into the middle of the junkyard. Why are we not talking about what the transitway is and what it's doing and how it's going to help or, you know, coordinate with this whole development? I think it absolutely needs to be incorporated in there.
Yeah, the transitway is a city, you know, is a concept that is an outgrowth of the North Branch framework. And the idea, obviously, is to bring transit from downtown north.
Yeah, so, but we're not talking about, we see the 606 West, we talk about the Metro. I see the yellow lines there, and we all know that up, you know, Kingsbury, you're planning about a transitway. We don't know.
We're not planning the transitway.
Well, the city is, but you're relying on it. You're leaning towards it. Your project is asking for funding through the public mechanism of TIF. But again, I'm not here to argue that, to attach to those things, but yet you don't show the other half. So it just, I find it odd, and I'm sure a lot of other people find it odd.
Okay. Can I address a couple of your other points? Do you mind?
Sure. Yeah, the access to the information on how to book space.
So that's one of them. You know, we will be posting these slides as well as the reference to how they differentiate from the July meeting. So you'll see some of those changes. You'll see specifically where that green space increased. It wasn't materially because of the addition of the two parcels on the north side. It was primarily because of the removal of two buildings, the large one, the 800-foot one that was mentioned, as well as one on the south side.
Well, you just moved the 800-foot one.
We didn't. We moved it, and we reduced the size. We moved it off what is now parkland in the presentation.
As far as programming, that is another conversation that we've had with the Chicago Park District about using, collaborating with the Park District about how to program the soccer fields. That's much more your purview than my purview, but we've had the conversations about partnering on how to program the soccer fields. If you have, I understand your point about where the soccer fields are relative to the water and relative to other venues. If you'd like to sit down and talk to us about our layout and your concerns, we'd be happy to sit down and have a conversation. Also, the numbers that you've seen today as far as green space and open space don't contemplate any of the green roofs or green terraces above grade.
I'm aware of that.
Another calculation that we can
I was clear that the grade level is indicated at 20 acres, but the green on there obviously shows a lot of rooftops. So I think it's just tough for people to understand that change.
Okay, and as far as the water taxi, we've been working with the water taxi folks. Those aren't private docks and stops. Those are water taxi stops that you can use your Ventra card on the water taxi.
Oh, that would be super. That would be super. I want to respond to Alderman Hopkins, who you said, well, what is another potential funding source here? By the way, I want to say first, a park and this development are not mutually exclusive. I mean, I really support this development, but I also really support ongoing public access and publicly owned land. In response to your question, and I'm sure this is going to be the angst of Mark Campana, Live Nation, Ticketmaster, and the Ricketts family, who are co-owners of the soccer, or owners of the soccer franchise, I guess. How about an entertainment tax to compensate for the impact of the 29,000 patrons that will weigh on the community infrastructure? Thank you.
Thank you. Sir?
Yes, Butler Adams, I give architecture.
I'm sorry, Butler, quickly. We have an entertainment tax in Chicago. It is the highest in the United States of America. So I don't think my colleagues on the city council would have the stomach to increase it. And I'm only answering your question to just show the challenge we face. Finding $200 million to pay for the park is not easy.
So,
Keating.
Sir?
For the record, my name is Butler Adams. Somebody mentioned Inglewood earlier. There aren't 50 continuous acres in Inglewood along a navigable waterway, so this is a little bit different than that. I've been kind of like staring at this rendering for 10, 15 minutes, and as somebody who gives architecture tours on the Chicago River, I never, ever expected to see something like this far north. And for somebody like me who likes development, this is fairly exciting. I know there's a lot of contention about the height and about the density, but I've also heard people several times mention this is a global city and a world-class city. Well, most global and world-class cities have taller buildings outside of their central core. Plan Commission just last month approved a pretty big project, 78, which has been mentioned before, the Alderman Mission Lakeshore East. I think that's going to have roughly 7 acres of open green space. The 78 is going to have roughly 13 acres of open green space. This is going to have about 20 acres of open green space, and you have less acreage than the 78. So that is fairly significant. Again, I know that people are, you know, kind of worried about the density and the height, but there are suburbs in the world that have buildings just as tall as this. Mississauga, just outside of Toronto, has very tall buildings. So this is not uncommon for a global and world city. And I know that, again, people are scared about the density, but Lincoln Park actually has 30,000 less residents than it did at its peak population. And Westtown has like 100,000 people less than at one time it did. So you're just putting back what's been lost over the past 50, 60, 70 years. So I, for one, are looking forward to this development. I'm a little bit disappointed that you actually cut the height of the buildings, taller, thinner buildings, and actually allow light and air to circulate down to the street. And that parking lot you all showed earlier was awful. It was awful. I've only seen a few good parking lots in my life, and one would be 600 Fairbanks by Helmut Jahn. The other one is Marina City. Other than that,
Nah.
SOM, you're on notice.
But I was kind of wondering, I know this is a $5 billion project. Do you have any ballpark ideas to what the benefits in the future in terms of tax revenue generated from the build-out of this property and project?
The taxes generated from the development are in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and so initially they have to go to refund the TIF benefit, but these are hundreds of millions of dollars of tax revenue coming into the city over a long-term horizon.
Well, just as a comparison, again, the 78 was approved last month by Plan Commission. They're going to be using about, you know, $300 to $500 million in TIF for their infrastructure. But again, because of the eventual tax revenue generated, that's going to kind of replenish that. And you know, I look forward to seeing it be built. I hope you all have been bending over backwards. And the alderman mentioned himself. You said 3 years you've been working on this. That's kind of a long time. That's kind of a long time, so.
Thank you.
And thanks, Butler, for you give me an opportunity to clarify, and I'll also respond to one of the owners of the hideout who mentioned, you know, yes, I've been working on this for 3 years. Actually, I've been talking about this, and I've been involved in this for probably closer to 6 years. It goes back to when I ran for alderman as a candidate for alderman. I repeatedly stated my position at the time that the plan manufacturing district zoning designation had run its course and needed to be eliminated. I advocated for that. Some of my competitors in that race disagreed with me. We had a healthy debate. We had numerous debates, actually, and my position evolved over time. I've been saying for a long time that the area that used to contain Finkel Steel and some of the other industrial uses needed to change, needed to be redevelopment. I ran as an alderman that supported the concept of redevelopment. When I alluded to the fact that I've been involved in this and my staff has been involved in this for 3 years, that wasn't a direct reference to Sterling Bay. They didn't own the property 3 years ago. That was a reference to the North Branch Framework Plan that we've worked on, that set the stage for where we are now. And one of my great frustrations at this point in time is trying to counter the perception that this is all a fraud, it's a scam, it's a done deal, none of this really matters because there's a secret star chamber cabal and all these decisions have been made. Many people believe that, and it's not true. But I honestly have to tell you, I don't think I've moved the needle one inch on any of those beliefs. The people who believe that believe it today. They believed it last year. Nothing I can say is going to change that, unfortunately. But I do know that as the alderman of the ward where this development is contained, pretty much 100% within the ward, I do have some very difficult decisions to make. I feel the weight of those decisions. I've been living with those decisions for years, and I haven't made those decisions. So when someone stands up in front of a room like this and says otherwise, it bothers me because I know it's not true, because that would really negate this whole thing that we're doing here. That would mean that we're wasting our time, that I'm wasting your time by even having this meeting. Why did you come if you think this has all been preordained and pre-decided and you're just being played? It really doesn't make a lot of sense. That's not what this process is about. And I stand by this process. I'm proud of this process. My staff has been proud of this process. We've been open. We've been inclusive. We've engaged stakeholders. I've dealt with people who, in my opinion, haven't really been acting in good faith. They've been really opposed to this whole thing from day one, and they've been trying to pretend otherwise so they can continue to be at the table. And that's fine, but it makes my job that much more difficult because it attacks the credibility, not just of this process, but of all the other people in it, all of the people that are in it for the right reasons, to try to make a very difficult decision with competing forces at play, to make a decision that's in the best interest of the entire city, but doesn't hurt the neighborhood that I represent and that we live in. It's not an easy thing to do. And the only way to do it is to do it. And it gets messy. This is how the sausage is made. It's being made in public. It's being made in meetings like this. This is what transparency looks like. And if you want to tell me that this process hasn't been transparent, you need to be specific. Tell me exactly what you would have done that I didn't do. Show me the times that we didn't have meetings, where decisions were... I'm sorry, Rita, don't interrupt me. I don't interrupt you. Show me the times where you would have had another public hearing instead of the one that I had. Show me the flaws in this process. Don't just throw that word transparency out there and think that ends the argument. We're not done. We're not done. No decisions have been made yet. And before they get made, we will be scheduling votes where other colleagues of mine on the city council will also have an input. So my audience isn't just here. The audience then will be the people who vote to make decisions for the entire city. Where are we going to find the $200 million? It's not solely up to me. That's up to many of my colleagues who have been promising you that they're going to deliver this park, among the other things that we're talking about here. Bridges over the river, extension of the 606 trail, and yes, a new school. A new school is needed. My child is 1 year away from being an Oscar Mayer student. I don't want him in an overcrowded classroom. That's not the future I want for him. That's not the future I want for my neighborhood. The challenge is how we pay for it. And that's one of the things we're going to try and determine before we move this forward and before anything gets approved. So if you believe that the decisions have already been made, don't come to the next meeting. Don't waste your time. If you want to stay involved in this process and help me and help my colleagues on the city council make a difficult decision, then continue raising your questions. Insist on answers. And we're not going to stop until we get them. Thank you. I think those are my concluding remarks because we're out of time.
I'm being told we can do another question from each side, and then we have to give the room back to the church. Sir?
Good evening. My name is John. I happen to be a resident of the ward and a neighbor. I also happen to be someone who has a lot of concerns and want to see for our city and our future. I also happen to be a developer and a strong supporter of this project, from what I've seen tonight. The concerns that people have raised tonight, I think, are very legitimate, and I think that Sterling Bay and the city, I know, are probably working very hard to address those concerns. It's a very big and very complicated deal. As a developer, I had a little bit of deja vu walking into this meeting tonight, because about 18 years ago, I did a development, which is right where we're standing right now, which is the old Montgomery Wards development. It was 30 acres. It was 2 million square feet of office. We built over 2,000 units. And there was a lot of concern, a lot of anxiety about that project. And I look back on it now, again, 18 years later, and we generated thousands of jobs. We generated over 2,000 units that we built there. The surrounding neighborhood had another 2,000 units. The tax revenues to the city have been tens of millions of dollars. And we won a number of awards. And those concerns, although they're very legitimate, if you have a good quality developer who has respect for the community and the process, and I think this developer has, and it's shown through its experience over the years that it is concerned about the neighborhoods that it builds in, and you have a city staff that is very diligent, and this city staff, I can tell you from my experience, is very diligent, that you will have, at the end of the day, a very quality outcome. I'm also concerned, personally, because I love the city, about the fiscal issues that we face right now. The first time in my career that I've really felt concern, one, we've had taxes going up pretty substantially. We have a big drag on our fiscal budget, and it's projects like this that help us get out of those problems. The fiscal problem was not something that this alderman or this mayor created. It was created over 40 years, and a lot of you mentioned earlier unfunded fiscal liabilities and pension funds. But those dollars, that deficit, can be solved in three ways. You can raise taxes. No one wants to do that. You can cut services. No one wants to do that. Or you can grow. And the city of Chicago has been saved. It's the great goose that laid the golden egg. By growing, and we've grown successfully over the last 10, 12 years pretty significantly, that taxes haven't had to be raised that much. But I am concerned about the future, and it's projects like this that help create a good fiscal viability for the city. The bottom line, I think, is it a quality development. And I look at this and a land plan, and again, I have not studied it in great detail, but for when I can see the walkability, the outdoor space, the connectivity, And I look at the site today and look at the condition of the site and say, this is a real jewel for the city. And if it's done in a quality manner, it'll be a real benefit for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am.
So quickly, good evening, everyone. My name is Carla Agustinelli. I'm the executive director of the Westloop Community Organization. I, by trade, am a professional community organizer. And I commend all of you for being here, coming out, and speaking on behalf of your community in waiting here for over 3 hours. I run the Westloop Community Organization. We've seen some of the most unprecedented boost in development over the last couple of years. We understand the challenges and concerns that large developments bring to a community. The Westloop Fulton Market District has experienced such growth within the last few years. Sterling Bay is one of the many developers in the neighborhood who have respected design guidelines, exhausted all of the efforts to restore and retain existing buildings, and believe me, I'm one of the people that keep their feet to the fire. And they give benefits to the community over and beyond neighborhood bonuses. Please note that we, as a community organization, have challenged Sterling Bay many of times. It's not been easy, but they have been supportive and receptive to the oftentimes very harsh criticisms and critiques. We, as your neighboring community organization, encourage you to stay involved, to stay organized, but to also partner with Sterling Bay to help enhance the quality of life in your neighborhood. I echo the alderman's sentiments. Your voices are so important here. Sterling Bay is here to help you guys. Trust me, I wouldn't put the organization's name on the line. They're going to work with you guys. That's it. Have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Well, thank you all so much. I applaud your sense of decorum, but really your passion and how well-informed the remarks were. You guys make Chicago a great city to be in, and I'm very confident about our future. And my thanks to Sterling and their team. I thought they stood in the arena and answered the questions to the best of their ability. Bless you, and have a great holiday season.